When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Novak Djokovic has won an 8th Australian Open title in 8 final appearances, 17 Grand Slam singles titles overall. He's just 2 behind Rafael Nadal, 3 behind Roger Federer. He's just beaten Dominic Thiem, and he's doing his little tour of the studios. He's going to go out and see all the fans out in Garden Square as we come to you just after the final, which finished moments ago. Dominic Thiem coming up short in 5 sets. Before we get into the detail, we've got Catherine Whittaker here, we've got Matt Roberts here in our final tennis podcast of the Australian Open in 2020. We have been sponsored again, folks, by the Fevertree Championships. We did that last week, we told you about it. The tournament that we all get to work at in June, just before the Wimbledon Championships, on the grass at the Queen's Club. And we want to tell you about their hospitality offerings and the opportunity to have a VIP day out at the Queen's Club. Don't forget, they have some seriously good players every single year at Queen's. Andy Murray's won it 5 times and he's hoping to come back. He's got a career-long agreement to play the event, obviously fitness permitting in his case, but you can rest assured that there will be some seriously big names there getting ready and getting their first taste of grass court tennis and trying to win that title. The hospitality offerings there to have a day out are pretty special. You can have any sort of level you want, quite honestly, whether you want to have a sort of sharing platter with your mates, to proper fine dining menus. You can have all the wines and the beers and the pims you like, and obviously sample the sponsor's products as well. Catherine, that's your personal favourite, isn't it?
I'd go sharing platter.
Would you?
Mm.
Okay. Oh, I quite like picking off what I want from the menu.
I like a platter.
Should we do both? Oh, no, we can't. We're working. But anyway, it's great. You get centre court tickets, premium level centre court tickets, and you've got restaurant seats reserved all day. Some of the balconies at the hospitality level also overlook the practice courts as well, which is really cool. You can get close up and see all the players going through the serving and all their pre-match preparations, and then you get to see the whole thing, all the matches. Awesome. So go and have a look down our show notes, and there's a link there if you want to go and check out the options to get a day out, a special day out at the Queen's Club for the Fevertree Championships. Right. Australian Open men's singles final has been completed. The whole tournament's been completed. We're in a deserted media centre, folks, and Novak Djokovic has done it. But a little bit like his Wimbledon triumph, which he won also in 5 sets, that one 13-12, and in a final set tiebreak, the celebrations were a little muted by comparison to some of his other Grand Slam successes. I mean, he's looked exhausted for most of the match today. There were moments of roaring, but you know, he's doing a little tour of the center court at the moment and showing the trophy off, but he does look whacked, to be honest. He's been having a chat with his support team, but it's not the roaring Djokovic of some of his other triumphs, but it is a 17th major, and I suppose it shows how much it takes really to keep on doing it.
Yeah, this and the US Open final contested between Rafael Nadal and Daniil Medvedev, as sort of Matt summed up in one of his post-match point tweets, is just testament to what it takes to beat these greats, you know, these stubborn greats that don't want to go anywhere. And it made me think about Mats Wilander's comments in his interview with you, which we ran on the podcast probably about a week ago now. Yeah. It was about the mid-tournament stage, where he was talking about, you know, there are guys around capable of beating one of Federer, Djokovic and Nadal in a Grand Slam, but can they do it twice? And he came close, Dominic Thiem, but he didn't do the double. Only Stan Wawrinka has done the Nadal Djokovic Grand Slam double here in 2014. He was helped a bit by a Nadal injury that day, but my goodness me, they're going to take some budging,
yeah,
aren't they? I mean, if we ever doubted it.
Yeah, they're the ultimate pack hunters. There's three of them.
Mm.
It's a fact. There's three of them, and normally you're going to have to beat two of them at least. You mentioned that Wimbledon final, David, that Djokovic won last year, and what struck me is that in that Wimbledon final,
announcement, Dominic Thiem will be in the main interview room at 12:40.
In that Wimbledon final, and again today in this final, it felt like Djokovic was there for the taking a little bit. But how many times does it feel like that, and how many times is that actually a reality? He understands how to win these matches, even if he's not necessarily feeling his best or playing his best. And it's an incredible ability that he has to win these big matches. He's just so good at them.
Imagine that, being able to win major titles when you're not actually at your best. That's incredible, really.
Yeah, imagine if your specialist skill in life was just winning.
I mean, a year ago, he was at his absolute best, wasn't he, against Nadal. He started a little bit like that tonight, but it didn't last. And so last year, it was just majestic. It was total domination of Nadal. I know some people would say, well, Nadal wasn't fully fit. I think that reduces...
Media announcement, Dominic Thiem is now on his way to the main interview room.
I don't think that
seven
does...
7 minutes ahead of schedule. He just can't wait to talk to the world's media, Dominic.
I think he's had enough. He wants to take his frosted tips and go. I think that did Djokovic down to talk too much about Nadal's physicality last year. Did I say Dominic Thiem? No, about Djokovic. Anyway.
He was fit. He was just a bit undercooked,
yeah.
Nadal.
But he was also smothered by Djokovic's game. And that's what happened at the start of this match. It did occur to me that we might get a straight set drubbing from Djokovic because of the way he started. Because he... Suddenly, Thiem didn't look this destructive force that I was talking about last night, who, if he plays his best, could blast Djokovic off the court. He just wasn't allowed to get any room to play any of his big shots.
He was being rushed by Djokovic's ability to stand up on the baseline and just redirect Thiem's shots. Thiem's shots weren't knocking Djokovic back like I think we thought they would. And actually, Djokovic ended up looking like the more powerful player in the rallies. He was the one dictating with his precision and his timing and his power. But it didn't last.
No.
It didn't last more than about 5 or 6 games.
And it wasn't... He was 4-2 up. Mm. And I think you actually showed me a statistic about that point, that he'd hit more unforced errors in the first 7 games than he had in the whole match of last year in the final.
That's right.
Which didn't... And it didn't really feel like that. And I know that unforced errors are a subjective measurement. Somebody's manually entering whether it's an unforced error or a forced error. But at the same time, it was a quick drop in level. Now, Thiem got better as well. But even so, it was quite a sudden drop off.
Today was the first day in... I know I missed the opening day of the tournament, but the first day in 14 days of this Grand Slam that's been windy, which is must have been the least windy Grand Slam, but certainly that I can remember. And it was a factor tonight, certainly in the opening stages, that I think Dominic Thiem struggled with the adjustment. It was chilly as well, which he would have definitely preferred it to have been hotter tonight. But yes, there was one end of the court where Thiem was really struggling to find his range, and I think it was the end of the court that he started at, and that sort of sent him a bit off kilter. And just, I mean, Djokovic owns that stage, doesn't he? He's great at you know, if you're coming out the slightest bit uncomfortable, he's a Mary Carrillo says he's an apex predator, right? And you show a bit of weakness and he's on you. And he was on him, but it as you say, it didn't last. And that was the story of the match. Nothing lasted. It was peaks and troughs and weirdness, yeah. and yeah, nothing lasted.
When you felt
media
like
announcement, Dominic Thiem is now in the main interview room.
Thank you. When you thought you'd got a handle on where this match was going,
yeah.
It would change.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I mean, I've made a fool of myself enough times this fortnight. But the way it went in sets two and three, I commentated on the second set, and that was the one where he just suddenly lost all timing, Djokovic. And it was difficult to know. I mean, I think there's some sort of physical issue. I don't know what it is. He hasn't told anybody about anything verbally in any of his press conferences. He's kind of alluded to there being something, I think. Is that right, Matt? I kind of feel like that it might have been alluded to in the last couple of rounds, that he wasn't feeling 100% or something like that. But there was no sort of really big tangible thing that everybody was talking about. There was the point of his coaches, Goran Ivanišević and Marin Vida, cancelling a press conference yesterday to preview this final, but that may just have been because it was time to practice and suddenly it clashed. We really don't know. But in the second set, he lost his timing. I didn't think there was a massive physical issue then at all. It was more about timing and Thiem playing better, no question. And then he got rattled and riled to Djokovic. He got two time violations in the same game, one of them delivering him a loss of a serve. And then he walked up to umpire Damien de Maistre and he tapped his foot about five times and he said, "Well done, man. Well done. You've made yourself really famous now. Mission accomplished." And he sat down. I mean, it was not pleasant, really. It was not pleasant what he said. And actually, he could probably have got warned again there for that sort of dissent. At the same time, I know some people feel like maybe that those time warnings were, or one of them was perhaps hastily imposed on him. And some people will point out that a Rafael Nadal takes a long time and sometimes gets given a bit more leeway. And, you know, it does depend on an umpire's interpretation of a rally and et cetera before when they press that stop clock or not. But it wasn't pleasant. Didn't enjoy hearing that. At the same time, I've heard it many, many times from a lot of players over the years. I remember Jim Courier saying that to an umpire. And again, I didn't like it. It's not a nice thing to witness. I've heard Andre Agassi say it. But I also think it's stressful. It's stressful being out there. And yeah, I mean, it's not nice, but I'm not sure I would handle it very well.
And in the grand scheme of things, it's not nice, but it's not that bad. It's just a strange... I always find it just a strange take to have. As you said, tennis players do always seem to say that to the umpire. Oh, well done for making yourself the story, making yourself the protagonist or whatever. It's something Kyrgios always says to the umpire. I just find that a bit weird. Like, they're just implementing a rule.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it is. I agree with you. I mean, it's not... It felt unpleasant. It's not far from the worst thing in the world. And it was... The thing is, he was rattled long before that. He was rattled incredibly early on. He was rattled when he was a breakup in the first set, which was really interesting. And he seemed to be rattled by the crowd support for Dominic Thiem. And look, I understand why he gets rattled about that. This is not a new conversation topic at all. And perhaps he got rattled earlier than perhaps he might have done elsewhere about that, because he feels like he ought to have, you know, this is his turf.
But which when he came out onto the court, he did have, because he got welcomed onto the court by a big ovation by the crowd, but it did turn quite quickly.
Yeah, I think he misinterpreted it, actually. I think he does have an enormous amount of support here in Australia and on the Rod Laver Arena. I mean, not just because there's a huge and very vocal Serbian community. I mean, he had Garden Square. I know he couldn't hear it or see it, but he had them. And I think, yeah, he did get a far bigger ovation out onto the court. And I think that the crowd were as pro-team as they were in that first set, because he went down early and they wanted a match.
And team does get you whipped up.
And team gets you whipped up. His tennis takes you with him. And, you know, obviously Djokovic has scar tissue about that kind of situation. But he took it very badly, when actually I think, I mean, it's easy for me to say, but he needn't have. I don't think they were negative about him in the way that other crowds have been. It certainly was extremely different to the feel of the Wimbledon final, obviously. Where Federer is involved, it's always a bit different, but it felt like he perhaps understandably let himself get rattled about that situation when he needn't have. I think, you know, he could have taken won the crowd back, but showing how rattled he was about it, they were like, well, we're sticking with team then.
I think there might have been an individual or a couple to one side of the crowd that had got him really wound up, because when he won the match, he shushed those particular people, and I noticed he'd had a bit of a look at them before, and I mean who knows what they might have said. Might have been nothing, might have been something that really got to him, but I think it shows, I mean, and again, we don't know whether he was physically struggling or not, but I think it shows how stressed out he was, because he, you know, how many of these chances does he get to win? Now, he makes it look like he's just going to get to all these finals and win them all, but he was under real threat tonight.
And I think there's a point that we need to make, that part of the reason he was stressed was because team was hurting him. Team was able to put him in an uncomfortable position that Nadal wasn't able to do in last year's final.
And team's beaten him 4 out of 5 times.
Exactly. So we said how team wasn't having much of an impact at the start, but his game did begin to have an impact. And in the second and third sets, team was taking over, taking control of the rallies. It looked like Djokovic had an energy, a power outage, and all the power went from his shots, and team was the one. You know, he was the aggressor, and that was a stressful place for Djokovic to be, whereas he's in his comfort zone against Nadal in last year's final in terms of the makeup of the rallies, and he knows that Nadal playing like he couldn't really hurt him, and then he was just able to kind of sail on and win that match in straight sets. But team disrupted Djokovic with his game, and Djokovic got stressed about that, I think, as well as the fact that he got himself stressed about the crowd, and those two things made him seem really on edge when perhaps he didn't quite need to be so much.
I think perhaps as well it's heightened because I don't even think team was playing his best at that point, and there's a knowledge that he has faced team at his best in the past and he's got beaten up by him.
Well, yeah, I think everyone noticed that team wasn't hitting his backhand down the line at all. Well, he was trying to hit it, but missing.
And then he stopped trusting it.
And he started making a few at the end of the third set. And then you're thinking, hang on a minute, team's 2 sets to 1 up and his game's starting to click. This is his chance. But then Djokovic went through a phase, I think it was the final game of the third set, where he seemed to switch back into the match a little bit. He threatened to break back, didn't, but you kind of felt his game was coming back, and then the start of the fourth set he kept it together as well, and that was team's moment to raise his game, I think, and he didn't quite. I don't think his game dropped, but I don't think he was ever able to find his absolute best tennis tonight.
I do think team slightly choked at the end of that fourth set when he got broken. I felt his nerve betrayed him a little bit. But there's another gap here that we need to fill, because The third set is when Djokovic's body language told you that he was really struggling physically. That's what he was communicating in the way he was carrying himself on the court. Did he go for a medical timeout?
We don't really know.
Yeah. So so the doctor came on court
midway through the third set when he was at least one break down in the third set at that point. The trainer and the doctor came out and he had a chat with them, and the court effects weren't high enough for us to really gather it. Tired was the only word we're confident that we could make out from that chat. He didn't receive any treatment. I don't think he was given anything. They left the court. And then,
well, Djokovic left the court.
Yes, at the end of the third set.
After the third set.
He just... 50% of the competitors just disappeared from the match.
The umpire and the supervisor, nobody appeared to know where Novak Djokovic had gone, which was a bit of a concern, really.
It is a concern in a tennis match.
Yeah, and you don't know where the players are.
And partly, Djokovic does have a little bit of that thing where... it's going terribly, and he just walks off. And we have sort of seen that before. Not the only one, but he does do that. And it's almost like the Hawkeye challenge that somebody does with like a raise of an eyebrow, you know. And you're supposed to interpret exactly what that means. Mm. But at the same time, I was slightly surprised that he wasn't intercepted.
It's not a good look for tennis that you've got one player on court in the midway through the biggest match of the competition, and the umpire's there on his radio trying to find out if one of the players is taking an injury timeout.
Is in the building.
Yeah, it is. Has he defaulted? Tennis needs to figure out some sort of rule on that, because it looks not great.
Not great. But the thing is, Pat Cash, who was in our 5 Live commentary box, was noticing how Djokovic kept sort of collapsing on his own serve. He was sort of serving and then falling forwards and just not timing it correctly. And in your words, it looked like he had a sort of power outage. And he looked really sort of, I don't know, lightheaded. I don't know. I mean, the other day we had when he was struggling with the contact lenses, and I think he did intimate at that time that it wasn't the only thing that was bothering him. I mean, it was like he couldn't really see. Who knows? Maybe he's got a little bug or something like that. It's difficult to know. Maybe they gave him some salts and it settled it down. It's impossible to know. We're not able to... I'm about to go to the airport in about an hour, so we're not going to be able to see him in the press conference to be able to grill him on that fact.
Let's also remember that two nights ago, Dominic Thiem's semi-final against Alexander Zverev, he exhibited similar physical symptoms, not identical, but we speculated that he was ill rather than injured.
Stomach cramps, wasn't it? It looks like
clutching at his stomach, and he explained afterwards that it was stress. It was stress induced.
And I can imagine that, really. But it's only speculation. I have no idea what it is. Twitter exploded about this, with a lot of people saying, "Oh, he's putting it on to try to put off his opponent."
Twitter loves an explosion.
And referencing the final he had here against Andy Murray, when he also looked sort of out on his feet, and then came back strongly and won the match. And people seem really wound up by this this concept. I personally get where people are coming from with that, but I also think it's just a different way to handle feeling rubbish. You're physically feeling rubbish or whether it's going badly, some players like Nadal don't want to show you anything. Novak Djokovic, it appears to me, just can't help but show everybody how he's feeling, and that's his way of handling it.
Yeah, that's my take as well. It's, you know, they're out there for 3.5-4 hours, upwards of that sometimes. You are going to have moments where you're feeling better, and you're going to have moments where you're feeling worse. That's just completely normal. It's just, it's far more obvious with Djokovic than it is with especially Federer and Nadal, who naturally are the comparisons that everyone makes. And you know, we were all saying, look, Djokovic will be able to reset from this. We've seen this before. Team needs to not think that Djokovic is done here. And I don't think he did. But, you know, in that respect, it just wasn't a different Djokovic match from other ones. You know, we've seen this before.
I've got to say,
there was nothing new there. I didn't think perhaps he seemed a little more irritated or angry about it. It wasn't just a complete drop of energy. There was some frustration with it too. But, you know, I just think it's these five set matches. It's the peaks and troughs of them, and he knows when to press the accelerator and when he needs to hold back.
And
it is a skill.
Sometimes when he just has to ride it out,
yeah,
and wait for it, the storm of the opponent or however he might be feeling to pass. I thought he was done. I thought Team, having gone two sets to one up, would have it. Personally, I thought he'd have enough time then with two sets to go to swing, connect enough, and win the match. I mean, I was wrong, but I thought that would happen.
I would have thought so if Team was playing his best. But the fact that he wasn't bringing his absolute best tennis, I never felt certain that he was going to just grab control of the match in the way he did in his last two rounds, because it was patchy. A lot of his tennis, even though he was in the lead, it was still quite patchy. That was what I thought anyway. I just thought Djokovic would be able to mount some kind of comeback.
And what was it Valander said about how they know how to do it?
Yeah. And I know that sounds like really lazy analysis. They just somehow know how to do it. But they just do.
It's experience, isn't it?
They just do.
No,
team
has never done it.
It's more than experience.
But
it's a sixth sense. Of course, experience helps. But
you don't know how to do it until you've done it.
Yeah. But it's chicken and egg, isn't it?
Sure, but that's
they do it in the first place because they've got the thing.
Glass ceiling that you have to break through. But you are at a great advantage as a five-set slam final if you've done it several times before, if you've successfully done it, I would have thought anyway.
Of course, and a lot of people remark on the fact that Djokovic and Nadal and Federer, for each of their first Grand Slams, they didn't have to face Grand Slam champions to win them. Not to diminish their what they've gone on
Federer
to do.
Federer played Philippoussis.
Yeah.
Djokovic played Tsonga.
And Nadal played Puerta.
Mariana
well,
Puerta.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'd not
so,
thought of that.
So that initial break of the ceiling, that hurdle, which we know, you know, Team Murray, so many of them, is that first hurdle to that's the most difficult to climb. It wasn't as huge a hurdle as it possibly could have been. Whereas Dominic Thiem and Andy Murray before him and Stan Wawrinka, etc., they're all having to do it by beating these all-time greats.
I've just remembered Djokovic played Federer in the 2007 US Open final before he played Tsonga
in the
Australian, but then he got a chance in a Grand Slam final very early in his career, not against Federer or Nadal.
You tweeted the Andy Murray quote for Team. I'm getting closer, because he is getting closer.
He lost in straight sets, four sets, and now five sets in his three Slam finals, and it is increasingly feeling like Team is slightly stepping into that gap that Murray's left as the guy who is going to take some heavy blows in these Grand Slam finals at the hands of these guys, but they're going to make him a better player, and eventually he is going to get there.
He's also done this without playing his best.
I mean, I think
against Nadal, yes, there were moments where it was just whoa, but even there, I kind of feel that I feel like there's another level
there's
that Dominic Thiem has got in him.
And it's really struck me watching him live over the course of this week that there's massive room for improvement on his serve. Imagine Dominic Thiem that's getting at least one free point a game on his serve, because he basically gets no completely 3 points on his serve. It's, and of course Nadal has to be the model because it's a very similar speed of serve, but Nadal has beefed his up a bit. That was the talk of the Australian Open last year, wasn't it? They had changed his motion a bit, and B, his placement is just exceptional. And I think if team could get anywhere near that, it would completely, well, not completely transform him, but it would be huge.
Another layer,
and it would give him even more confidence in hitting out on his ground strokes because it's just that bit of extra cushion.
And Djokovic has done it with that ball toss thing that Goran's got him doing.
And he's got Nicolas Massou, who I really think could get anybody out of even the deepest hole of despair. I want some Massou in my life, just coaching me through the bad times. He seems,
think, and again, I don't understand the technicals enough to know exactly what he'd need to do, but I don't feel like team makes enough good returns against these people. I still think he can get served off a court a bit too many times. We saw it against Zverev. He won the match, but I felt like he missed a lot of returns that certain players would do a better job with. I mean, maybe it's more difficult for a one-hander to figure that out.
No, I agree. I remember even when he played Nadal, I felt like eventually he started hitting his backhand return a lot better, but for a portion of that match, it felt like Nadal had a little bit of a safe zone to go to when he was serving to team in a way that he doesn't have when he plays someone like Djokovic or Murray or Federer with his improved backhand return. I think serve and return are probably the two areas where you would look at team's game. And what he has shown in the last year is an ability to make those improvements. You know, the way now he is committed to finishing points at the net when he has the opportunity. He hits a big shot and he follows it in. That's a massive improvement in his game. Just one obvious one. I mean, there are other ones, but it's such a good sign that he is making those adjustments. It bodes well for the next few years for him, really, I think.
Yeah. Djokovic on 17 now. And back to number one in the world.
And if he stays at number one through the season, I think he needs to get to October the 5th, I think I saw. He will actually overtake Federer's record for most weeks ever at number one, which...
Wow.
I think that would be huge for him.
Which would be... Djokovic has always talked so much about the ranking, almost, you know, as important as slams in his mind.
So technically, he could take both of Federer's records this year.
Yeah, well, he could equal the slam record, and he could overtake Federer's number one record.
Yeah,
I mean,
calendar slam, I can't see, but
no,
you wouldn't completely rule it out. I'd be surprised if he'd win the French Open again. Really, I think.
Yeah, well, I think...
Even though I predicted it last year.
I would put Thiem and Nadal
yes.
more likely to win the French Open than Djokovic.
Olympic year.
And an Olympic year, there's that.
Not for Thiem. Massou's just going to go on his own, relive the glory days.
Enter.
Yeah.
Go and win it again. It's very interesting, isn't it, to sort of see Djokovic try to wrestle with the history books like this, because I sense it is weighing pretty heavily, because this wasn't like last year, and neither was a Wimbledon final. He didn't, you know, I mean, he's winning these titles without playing his best. It's incredible. In the finals, anyway. I mean, he was brilliant on the way, but he showed the stress today, showed the stress at Wimbledon, and yet he still got the job done. This time next year, yeah, he could well be sitting with 20, couldn't he?
So you think two more this year and the Australian Open next year?
He certainly could.
Yeah?
He certainly could. I could imagine him winning Wimbledon and the US.
It's one of those where, as much as I feel quite ready for a Thiem or a Medvedev or a Tsitsipas to win a slam, I am also completely invested in this Grand Slam race and completely excited by it and find it compelling, all the different possibilities. You know, I was thinking, I think I tweeted last year that when Federer had 2 match points in the Wimbledon final, it felt like he was going to be the one to end up with the most. Then Nadal goes and wins the US Open, you think, actually, Nadal's probably going to end up with the most. Then Djokovic wins the Australian Open, and you're thinking, well, of course, Djokovic is going to end up with the most. It just keeps changing. Yeah. And as much as this dominance, some people are maybe tiring of it, as long as the Grand Slam race is alive, it's always going to be interesting. Yeah.
Historically, we are witnessing an incredible event, really.
It's extraordinary. Every slam, history is either being made or someone's getting closer to rewriting it. And
you can kind of imagine that in 10, 20 years' time, there will be people we know who will say, "What, you covered tennis when those three were all at their best?" I mean, that I'm sure that will happen.
Mm.
That sort of conversation, because who knows when we'll get a situation like this again.
Well, I mean, I don't think we will.
Might do. Pete Sampras, 10 years ago, Pete Sampras was still the record holder on 14, 10 years ago. I think, is that right?
Yeah, Federer got him in 2009 Wimbledon.
Yeah. Okay. So it was just over 10 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, I know. But three at one time again.
That's potentially 60 Grand Slam titles.
Yeah. Good luck.
Which is what you think, isn't it?
Good luck, lads.
You think they're all ending on 20?
No, I mean,
stand by that.
I don't know. I don't. I have no idea.
So you're moonwalking away from that prediction.
I think it could happen.
Oh, anything could happen.
I sort of said that because it's a nice line. I have no. Honestly, I have no idea what they're going to end up on.
Of course, we don't have any idea about anything, and we still do a podcast.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. I don't think Federer will win anymore. Pat Cash thinks he'll win another Wimbledon. I don't. I can feel the Federer fans just shouting down their phones right now. maybe he will. but I don't know. I mean, look, he had such an incredible chance last year. And he's another year older this time. And I think that's the only one he can win now. His body is failing him on hard courts at these slams. That's two in a row where his back has gone, or is in this situation his groin has gone.
Do you think there's one of the three that wants it more than the others?
Not really. I think that they're all just so competitive. They're all playing it down.
Well, Djokovic isn't.
He could make a bigger deal out of it than he does. I think he could come in and say, I want that record, and I'm not going to stop until I get it. But he kind of says, well, obviously I want it. But then he goes into his, you know, into polite mode, really. But I think maybe it means most to him, because that would be the ultimate validation of his position in the game, because there are people who will never accept him, but if he's got the numbers, he can say, well, screw you, there you go.
He's always been defined by the chase, hasn't he? He was the third of them to come along, and now he's trying to catch up. It fits his narrative that he's chasing it down, and it kind of fits Federer's narrative that he's protecting it a little bit. And then Nadal, in a way, I think, is the one that can get overlooked a little bit in all this. You know, given how dominant he is at the French Open, you know, two more French Opens might be enough for him to end up with the record. And how plausible does that feel? Very plausible.
It's very cool.
And actually, a large takeaway from this tournament is just how the narratives of both tours have been kept. You know, we've seen Djokovic win tonight, Kenin yesterday being a new Grand Slam winner and a very young Grand Slam winner. Again, you know, how interesting just how different the two tours are at the moment. And, you know, you can debate which one you prefer. Personally, I like both, you know. One day it might flip. It's certainly been the case in the past where the women have had dominant champions and the men have had periods of, you know, lots of different winners. And it just feels like this tournament has just carried on the themes that we've been seeing for the last 2 years, really. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to keep happening. I agree with Mats Wilander, really. I think they're getting closer, these guys, but they're not there yet. Because the three of them are still around. If there's only one of them still around, it would be different. But
and the one other factor that I find very interesting this year is that Olympic title. How that will change the priorities of these people, because Djokovic has never won one. Remember how devastated he was when Del Potro beat him. Nadal's won one.
Yep.
He won one.
He's won one singles gold and one doubles gold.
Federer's got a doubles.
And I think that would be a big deal for him, the singles there in Tokyo. So, and that's in a difficult pocket of the calendar. After, you know, you've got Wimbledon, then you go straight into that Olympics, and you've got to be up for that, and then you've got to come out of that and play. That's a tough ask. Well, it was Stan Wawrinka who won the last one, wasn't it? After Murray had won gold, Stan Wawrinka ended up winning the US Open. Maybe that US Open is going to yield a bit of a strange
result.
I think
that's a good shout.
It's enough to make you want to play Kitzbühel.
Dominic, maybe this is it. Maybe Team is going to be the one to profit from the Olympics and end up winning his first slam at the US Open.
Nothing says that like clay court 250s, does it? Matt and I discussed a couple of weeks ago that we both, in our long range, no one's asking us to make these predictions, we both had Team winning the US Open.
Oh, really?
Mm.
Well, that's good.
And I do, as much as I don't really understand why Team's not playing the Olympics, and I don't think that is his reason. I could see that being a knock-on benefit for him.
Could be, yeah.
And I think, you know, if we're talking about Federer's year, the Olympics is best of three, which massively boosts his chances,
yeah,
I think,
does.
if he were to play Djokovic, certainly.
Wow. Playing anybody, really. I mean, I do think that does help him.
I think in a way it makes him more vulnerable against some of the lower rank players. But I think if he plays a top rank player, it helps him.
How many of these legends? How many tennis players, full stop, are going to be flag bearers for their country at that Olympics? I am so pumped. But, I mean, Olympics in general, but the Olympic tennis this year, it is 6 months away and I am salivating.
Fantastic.
I'm David Law-esque pumped.
Wow. Yeah. How about that? Okay. Well, meanwhile, Novak Djokovic has just been into the Channel 9 studio. He's just gone on to the... They have that one court where they fill it full of fans so they can watch it on the big screen. He's been to them. Now he's being presented to all the fans in Garden Square. I went out there earlier. There are hundreds of people with Serbian flags chanting his name. And I reckon he'll be into his press conference in about 3 hours, the way things are going.
Yeah.
In which case, I'll be on a flight at that point.
With me?
Yeah, with you. We're going on a flight to so we can watch the NFL, watch the Super Bowl. Brilliant. Catherine looks
more pumped. NFL, Catherine.
You get to spend another 18 hours getting irritated about NFL.
Yeah. What was it you said? Lots of blokes leaning forwards.
But bending over.
Yeah.
Yeah, while a clock doesn't tick down.
Yes, you Brilliant. Can tell. I've got my work cut out to get her into it. But I believe in myself.
I've had the Super Bowl described to me in tennis terms as a matchup between Petra Kvitova and Simona Halep.
Oh.
In terms of the various playing styles.
Between these two particular teams, the San Francisco,
in the Super Bowl.
The 49ers against the Chiefs.
Exactly. Yeah. So if that's
Catherine,
whetted
that's
your
really
appetite,
excited.
Catherine.
Yeah.
It's whetted my appetite for Kvitova against Halep, yeah.
And she's going to spend the whole 4 hours of the match, and they play 4 hours, trying to work out which one's which.
Well, I've got a day of sightseeing in Melbourne where the forecast is rain and gale force winds.
I've told Matt to go to the aquarium.
Yeah.
Right.
See all the deadly jellyfish that Australia has to offer.
Fantastic.
So hang on, is the Super Bowl happening like tonight?
Yeah, in about
ooh. While we're on the okay. I'll give it a whirl.
Okay. You're going to need to show me how to make the telly work.
Who's doing the halftime show?
It's going to be J-Lo and Shakira.
Right.
Yeah.
Great. Like the Davis Cup closing ceremony.
Can you show me how to use the telly on the
With
plane?
Without added J-Lo.
I don't know how to use it.
Sure.
Thanks. Right. Doubles final.
Can I just say something very quickly
about
the singles final? It's boring and moany. But I've seen a load of people on Twitter having a go at both team and Djokovic for not pledging all of their prize money to bushfire relief, and it's just really annoyed me because A, not everybody is public about their charitable donations. You've got no idea what these people have contributed to bushfire relief or other charities for that matter, and just the sort of virtue signalling pylon of I know that's not the intended consequence of what Zverev did, and his pledge was extremely generous, but equally the subsequent pressure applied to other players to make some kind of public gesture, I don't feel that's on.
Yeah, well said. I agree. And I think tennis overall at this tournament have put together about 6 million, which is great.
Yeah, and that's, as I say, that's only public. That's only what's known about publicly.
Yeah. No, you're right. I think that's a good point well made. Doubles final, men's doubles final, won by Britain's Joe Salisbury and America's Rajiv Ram, and it was the first ever slam for Joe Salisbury, who played brilliantly today. And Rajiv Ram, I didn't realise this, he's 35 years of age, he'd never won a men's double slam either. He'd won a mixed double slam last year, but what a moment for him.
It was something like his 58th men's Grand Slam tournament, something like that, 56th or 58th, and he finally got his first one. And it's one of those partnerships which has massively worked out for both of them. I mean, Joe Salisbury you know, not many people knew about Joe Salisbury 18 months ago, and now he's a Grand Slam champion, and Ram has, it's helped him get over the line. And they were, I mean, they were the seeded team. They're up against an inexperienced pair, and they just showed their class in that match. They were, the number of break points they created in men's doubles where serve dominates was extraordinary. They were so good on return, and Joe Salisbury in particular felt like the best player on the court. He was fantastic, and he's now put himself in a position, talking about the Olympics, to be at the Olympics, and he would get choice of partner.
This puts him up to four in the world, and if he's top 10 at the time of Olympics, he gets to select his partner. And he was asked by Russell Fuller on the BBC explicitly, would you like to play with Andy Murray? And he said, yeah, that would be super cool, and I'd love that, which, I mean, tough one for Jamie Murray. Very tough on that, but I mean, amazing for Joe Salisbury. And Rajiv Ram, I learned today, used to be coached by Australian Open Tournament Director Craig Tiley.
Well, would you believe I knew this? Because and it was only when he said that on court that it reminded me. I remember being in the tournament in Gstaad in, I think, about 2002 when I met Craig Tiley. I'd never met him before. He'd come over, I think, to sort of run some sort of camps, training camps. And I got chatting to him, and I actually found him really good company, really, really good to talk to. It was way before his Tennis Australia days. And he used to be, I think, the head coach or captain of the Illinois University tennis team, and he was there. He was doing that for about 10 years, and he ran the whole program at Illinois University. And on his team was Rajiv Ram. You may remember a player called Amir Delic. I don't know if you remember him. And he told me about those two, and it was one of those where, you know, somebody tells you about a player who's or coming up or who's at college, and I just remember writing these down on a piece of paper. Right, I'm going to look out for these guys, you know, and see what they're like.
What he's like is a man with a serve that's a carbon copy of Pete Sampras.
Yes.
I love it when that happens.
Down to what he does with his left foot.
To the ticks.
Yeah. It's extraordinary.
Very, very. And I think, actually, I think Kevin Anderson went to that university as well.
Yes.
If I think
where he
rightly.
Met Kelsey.
Right, okay. So, very well done to Rajiv Ram and Joe Salisbury, who beat Max Purcell and Luke Saville, and it was pretty one-sided.
Unexpectedly not related.
Yeah, they do look incredibly similar, as Catherine said, hairstyle-wise. 6'4", 6'2".
Turns out, guys, bad hair doesn't win you Grand Slam titles. That's what we've learned today.
Oh, well, could have been predicted. In the wheelchair singles finals, Yui Kamiji won 6-2, 6-2. And
that's an Australian Open double for her.
And Shingo Kaneda, I think, won about 10th title or something like that, I heard.
He's
today.
Incredible.
Against Gordon Reid, 6-4, 6-4. So very well done. And that is about a wrap for the Australian Open in 2020, both for the tournament. And I should say, I think Novak Djokovic finished his title-winning match nearly 2 hours ago, and we're still looking at a screen watching him walk down a corridor back from those fans in Garden Square where he'd been greeting them. There's a chap who's following him, carrying his trophy. And now he's already done his Channel 9 studio interview.
Hang on, he's about to walk past us. He's down there.
He is literally about 50 feet away from us. I can actually hear people shouting his name as he walks past at the moment. And there's a scramble. And he's walking up onto a balcony. And because he'll be going into the next big stadium, won't
he?
Yeah, there he is. All right, Novak. Yeah, he's just going on the balcony over there. And he's on his way, I think, to ESPN's TV studio, and he'll do this. He'll go to all of these big TV studios, and this will last for hours. And then eventually he'll come into the media centre, and he'll sit. He'll talk to all the media in English.
Then he'll. We have a provisional time for Novak Djokovic's interview in the main interview room. This provisional time is 1:50. This is subject to change.
1:50. So thank you very much to Eleanor Preston of the media team here. So 10 to 2 in the morning is when Novak Djokovic will do his press conference. He'll speak in English, then he'll speak in Serbian, then he'll do a load more one-to-one interviews. He'll probably get to bed at about 4, and that's even without a celebration.
Sometimes they go straight to the airport.
He might go straight to the airport, or he might do...
They do a photo shoot.
We've sometimes shared flights, though, with the champions here. We're on a 6 a.m. flight, aren't we?
I was on Djokovic's flight last year.
Right. And sometimes they go, as Sophia Kenin did today, into one of the parks and have the trophy and do a big photo shoot. And wasn't that a nice scene today? She was so chuffed.
Yeah, if you haven't seen those pictures and the dress she wore, then check them out. It's extraordinary. I love the idea that she might have just had that in her suitcase, ready to go, just in case.
She's a
rifle through a wardrobe and thought, yeah, I'll pack that. You never know when you'll need it.
It's a very cool outfit.
She looks like a queen.
So, Djokovic, I think he's talking to Mats Wilander, actually, as well. So that's his latest interview, and it's just a scene out there. That's it, really. The Australian Open has come to an end for another year. Don't forget that package of stuff that the Fevertree Championships are offering that we are sponsored by them for this particular episode, so we want to tell you about that, which we did at the start. The most wonderful opportunities to go and watch live tennis up close and have a fantastic day. Get yourself wined and dined, and the details are on our show notes. The link is there if you want to go and check the details of all that out. Catherine, Matt, Butler, Crumble, who's been our Australian Open mascot, And just the best Australian Open mascot we could possibly have expected to have had. What a treat to have had Crumble. Butler, we've got you throughout the rest of the year. But, yeah, Jim Boyle, who's the owner of Crumble, has done us proud, I would say.
Jim does good dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, good dog, good content.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
We're happy. And to everybody who backed our Kickstarter to crowdfund us for this year, well, you people are the reason that Matt and Catherine are sitting around this table right now, sending us out here to Melbourne. I was here for the BBC, but the rest of the whole podcast is because of you. So can't thank you enough for your
thank
support.
You.
We hope we've done you proud. And the idea for the rest of the year is to continue in the same similar vein. We want to do as many great shows as we can. Well, we hope you think they're good anyway.
humble brag.
And I should also say we're going to have a big interview coming your way very, very soon. Maybe even next week. We're just working out when to put it out. It's an interview Catherine and I did yesterday with the 2013 Wimbledon champion Marion Bartoli, and it's one of the most important interviews and moving experiences I've ever had in this sport and broadcasting in it and talking about tennis. And I don't want to say too much more. You listen to it yourself, but I think, Catherine, you would concur.
I'm nodding.
Yeah. So that'll be coming your way soon. We'll let you know on our normal channels when Marion Bartoli, the interview, is out. That's about it, folks.
Except...
What?
Matt's got our last three Australian Open shout-outs.
How dare I? Yeah. Oh, by the way, anybody who's paid for the intros, you will be getting them. We'll be sorting out a system so that you can get them to us. And introducing the show. Lots and lots of people. But we've also got shout-outs. Matt, who we got?
We have Angela Link.
Good work, Angela.
Jessica Thompson.
Jessica.
And... Cherie McDermott.
Cherie. Is that pronounced correctly?
Or Sherry.
Well,
Sherry.
Was it Cherie Blair or Sherry Blair?
I really don't know. But Cherie, Sherry, you're a legend.
Thank you all the same.
And you, Jessica. And you, Angela. Thank you very much for your support. You've been brilliant. And as have everybody. We're going to go and get a flight. Go home now. Sit on it for 24 hours.
Matt's going to the aquarium.
Yes, I'm going to the aquarium and then a flight, and I land on Tuesday lunchtime in the UK, and because I can't get enough of tennis, on Wednesday lunchtime I'm going to Belgium for Fed Cup.
Hey, excellent. What's happening?
Which I agreed to before the tournament.
And now you're exhausted.
And now I'm exhausted. But, you know, it'll be great.
He can't wait. So that's all coming up. I should say as well, as I mentioned, our Kickstarter for 2020 is over. We have finished our crowdfunding. We're set for the year. We know what we're doing. But if you've only just started listening to the tennis podcast throughout the Australian Open and think, oh, I wish I could have contributed because I've enjoyed it and I want to help out, we do have a link in our show notes as well, just to get yourself a reminder when we start our next one. It's ages away. It's December. You know, it's ages away. You don't need to worry about it. But if you want a reminder in December because you've enjoyed the show, get on that list and you'll have one email in December on December the 1st to remind you. So that's it. Catherine, been a pleasure.
I don't like endings.
No, but the beauty is the podcast goes on and on and on. And we just come back next time.
I'm genuinely nervous about us sharing a plane together for the first time.
I'm not that energetic on planes.
I'm, as an outsider, very excited about it.
You can hear all about it, Matt. Matt, you've been a legend. Hasn't he been a legend?
He really has.
He's the best, isn't he?
Yep.
Oh,
the very, very best.
We all agree. You had a good time.
The Australian
really
Open
great.
Champions are Sofia Kenin, Novak Djokovic and Matt Roberts.
And on that
Stop
note...
Stop, guys. Crumble.
I think Crumble would have beaten them all. He'd have taken you out, Novak. No worries. Crumble. I think it's time to go, folks. All right, thanks for listening and your company, and we'll see you next time. And bye.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.